From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Well, as we, some of us, reluctantly put a wrap on biking season and start gearing up for ski season, we thought we'd talk to an expert on ski conditioning for our monthly spot with Intermountain Park City Hospital, in which we speak to the medical experts on various topics. This month's expert is Mason Law. He is the doctor of physical therapy at Park City Hospital Physical Therapy. He's an avid cyclist, and in addition to treating those patients who come in post-injury, he plays a big role in conditioning, namely ski conditioning, bike fitting, performance, and so much more. We hope you enjoy this interview that I taped last week with Mason Law. Mason, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Mason, I'm wondering if most people get to about this time of the year and they say, wow, I wonder if there's time for me to do a ski conditioning class before I go skiing mid-December and get in shape for skiing. And then in spring, you know, people say, oh, this year I'm going to really start a lot sooner ski conditioning. When is the perfect time to start your ski conditioning?
Well, that's a really good question. And I would say the best time is now. No better time than the present. Really, any time can work, but it's good to be aware of the fact that, you know, that you recognize, hey, maybe as we transition from season to season, the needs of my fitness in the summertime are going to be a little bit different than in the winter. And so I think, it's when you follow whatever your own individual journey and fitness and skiing is, it really comes down to the individual and what they're doing with their time and how much of it that they need personally. So like I said, the best time is now. And as the ski season is upon us now, it's not too late to get into a ski strengthening program, ski conditioning program. Anyone can benefit from it at any time.
Well, that's heartening to know, considering, during the fall, it's difficult. Like maybe biking season is over and we're not so set on, especially this year, going indoors to a gym for our ski conditioning or strength training. Before we go on talking about ski conditioning, let's talk a little bit about you. You've got a really interesting bio and great clinical interests, and you're a cyclist yourself. I think you do a lot of racing. And tell us what you do at Park City Hospital Physical Therapy.
So my name is Mason Law. I'm a physical therapist. I work in the Park City Physical Therapy Department here at the Intermountain Hospital. My role is within the sports performance team, helping both injured athletes as well as weekend warriors, anyone from returning from any orthopedic injury, post-surgical. But I also do have a large role in what we do with our cycling clinic, and I do bike fits for people. We perform different physiological testing on athletes. And so my role has traditionally been more on the bike fitting and making sure that people are safe when they're riding their bike so they can avoid an injury, or coming back from an injury, making sure that the position on their bike helps them to just be conducive to their overall health. But I work here. I live in Salt Lake, but I make the drive up the hill to come up here because I love working with the demographics and the cycling community. And so I'm really lucky to be here, and the staff that we have on here, everyone here is just fantastic. And it's a huge opportunity for me to be doing what I do. I love doing it. And I'm an avid winter sports athlete as well. I love snowboarding as well as getting into a lot of the Nordic skiing and skate skiing, classic skiing. I love doing that in the wintertime. And it's good because there is this transition between the shoulder seasons when you're cycling or trail running or whatever it is that you do, or you have been doing during this strange year of COVID. But there's a lot of crossover from one endeavor to another. And it's good because a lot of times, you know, what you do with one activity can help out with another one. But it is good to make sure that you are aware of what you're doing, because sometimes you can't have too much of a good thing. And as a cyclist, we move a lot in this, what we call the sagittal plane, where we're just going kind of forward motion and we're not doing much lateral motion as side to side. And so doing some element of cross training does help you so that you don't develop any of these overuse injuries. So it is good to get out of just doing the same thing over and over. And there have been studies that show that high school athletes that do multiple sports, they're less likely to be injured because they're not just doing one thing over and over. They're making shapes with their bodies and they're changing the direction of how they move. And that's really, really important for the core stability.
You're making such great points here. And before we move on to kind of talk about how one sport transfers to another, I wanted to ask you about a bike fit and about cycling injuries. And, you know, if you don't have a correct bike fit, you know, one done by someone like you, a professional, what are the kinds of injuries that you see from that, you know, from not having a great fit on your bike?
Oh, great, great question. And I could go off for a long time, so careful what you wish for here. But I think I like to categorize them. We see the whole gamut, really. We see quite a few, whether they're traumatic crashes or they're an overuse injury where they just went, you know, thousands and thousands of revolutions in a position that was not conducive with their body. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for a long time, knee pain was the classic overuse injury for a cyclist. And it still is. A lot of people develop knee pain, but I think it has been surpassed in the last couple of years with back pain. And both of those are really, really easy to manage on paper. But the execution of it can be a little bit difficult for some people because they may unknowingly be provoking it. So yeah, whether you're on a road bike or a mountain bike or a gravel bike or anything in between, a basic bike fit can help to ensure that you can keep going and keep riding and keep enjoying what you do. But yeah, there's so many injuries that we see. And the more I do this, the more I see, like, you know, everyone really should have one just to double check what they're doing and avoid any injuries, not just people who have had surgery and they want to make sure their surgery isn't hindered because of riding the bike. But, you know, when you ride a bicycle, you connect with the bike on three locations, your handlebars, your saddle, and your pedals. And many people talk about how those are the main troublesome spots for people. You know, your hands go numb. Maybe you have an issue in the saddle and you have a hot spot on your foot. But what I've seen a lot as well is that those are the places where your body connects with the bike. But for someone who's maybe more of a seasoned cyclist, those spots are usually pretty good if they're dialed in well and they know, you know, they have good body awareness and they've been riding for a while. But it's actually where that force is transmitted. So, for example, the pressure from the knee, from the pedal and the saddle could be affecting the position of the knee, even though the knee doesn't actually touch the bicycle. And the same thing happens with the back and even the neck. And those are some of those injuries that, you know, can, if they're just an overuse injury, those can be definitely adjusted and managed from the position of the bike in conjunction with some traditional physical therapy that includes some stretching, joint mobilization, and definitely some core strengthening as well.
I think a lot of people love being on a mountain bike because they just feel like they can be more upright and it doesn't then create neck or back pain. And, you know, even road bikes, I've seen people just say, I would rather be more upright on my road bike. I don't care about the aerodynamics of it. How do you steer people towards, you know, the length of stem or, you know, handlebar position when we're talking about these sorts of topics? You know, I like to be more upright. It feels better on my back and neck.
Yeah, good question. I like to steer toward the science, and I have, unfortunately, a lot of anecdotal information to help guide that decision. I was a patient myself last year. I had a pretty nasty crash and broke my elbow and had some of the doctors here at Intermountain help me out through that. I was out 2 months with an injury, so I can speak from experience.
Wow.
But as far as the upright position, yeah, most of the people don't care too much about if they're super aero or not, especially on a mountain bike. And a lot of people would even say, you know, like, you know, on a mountain bike, I'm up off the seat a lot. And so does my position really matter? Well, what matters is how your body is, where your center of gravity is. And that's going to change a lot if you're going uphill, if you're climbing, and then if you're descending. And so, you know, some of the technology has changed a lot how we ride for good, for the most part. But then another thing with the technology is you get these little sub-disciplines. I mean, within mountain biking, you have cross-country, you have trail riding, you have downhill, enduro, and so many different sub-disciplines where the technology might be a little bit different and your position might be a different, you know, with whether you're a hardcore downhill racer that's got these super, super wide bars and you use flat pedals, that's going to be different than someone who's, you know, going for a top 10 at the point-to-point race because they're a cross-country racer and they have a completely other, a different position. One element I would say, the wide handlebars has become the trend of the bike world, which does give you more control when you're descending, but it does affect your overall trunk flexion. So you're going to be leaning forward more. And so a good idea is to make sure that it's not just in isolation that you look how wide are your bars. You look at the width of the bars with what stem position you have and how that relates to your overall reach with where your saddle is. So you're not having to flex too far forward or you're not steering this huge truck down a hill. And so a shorter stem on a mountain bike is going to give you a little bit more control as well. And so, yeah, looking at the big picture is really important. And, you know, another thing too is I've myself crashed and worked with other people who have crashed going in really tight corners, or, you know, you're on, you know, some of the trails that we have around here where you have really, really tight trees that you're going through. Those wide bars can clip a handlebar, that can clip a tree really easily. And if you're even for a seasoned rider, you can do that. So it's something to be aware of, if how wide your bar is. It's, I guess, to sum it up, it just comes down to your riding style, what you like doing, what your goals are, and what your overall anatomy is, and making sure that everything is, you know, in the whole scheme of things, the big picture, what you want.
If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, I'm speaking with Mason Law. He is a doctor of physical therapy at Intermountain Park City Hospital in the physical therapy department. Well, Mason, you can tell I have a hard time leaving the biking season behind because I could just talk about, you know, bike fit for an hour, like you say. But let's move from biking season into skiing. And one of the questions I always have about, as you said, I forget the wording, specific wording you use, but we sort of go up and down when we cycle and we're increasing our strength on, you said, the sagittal plane, but we're not doing a lot of lateral. And when we ski, whether we're downhill skiing or skate skiing, you know, cross country skiing, we're using our lateral, we need that lateral stability. So you're probably going to tell us it's not enough to just train on your bicycle during the summer and think you'll be ready for the ski season in terms of keeping yourself safe.
Yeah, absolutely. As much of an advocate I am as for the bicycle, I recognize that there's some off the bike dry land training that would be important as well, just to get you into a different position, move the body differently. I have this phrase that I like to say. It's, you know, some cyclists have really strong quads with a weak core, and it's kind of like you're a loose cannon because you have these really, really strong muscles, but it's hard to direct those muscles if you don't have them stable. And that comes from the core. And the core is really strengthened a lot when you get into moving in different directions. So, I mean, I like to think of just some of the basic core exercises. A lot of people, some people love it or they hate it. But thinking of our situation we find ourselves in with quarantine, a lot of people feel like they don't have the right equipment or they don't know exactly what are the right exercises. Honestly, the principles of core are so basic. You can do just body weight movement where you're doing like a lunge or a side lunge or so many things. Some of the stuff that's come out recently for functional fitness, you look at someone doing some of these exercises, and if you didn't know any better, you think they're just, you know, doing some breakdancing or they're doing some recess playground games. But really coming back to some of just that basic human movement is really, really important. Doing exercises like a bear crawl, it's silly to look at someone crawl on the ground like that, but where you're just crawling on your hands and feet, but keeping your knees off the ground, there's a lot of core strength that is required to do something as simple as that, as well as the flexibility to get into those positions, and then start doing it side to side, and you really get a really strong, good workout. And I would also emphasize trying to think of single leg exercises where maybe you do have one side of your body that's stronger than the other. If you can distribute that load on one side of the body, you really can challenge some of those weaknesses that maybe you didn't know were. And I mean, there's a lot of different exercises, whether you're doing a single leg deadlift or some lunges in multiple planes. Take some of those classic exercises like a squat or a lunge or a push-up, and you can add a little variability to it, just modify it so you move a little bit differently, mm-hmm. and you challenge your core and challenge yourself in a way that maybe you wouldn't have done otherwise.
This is all great information, and I'm picturing the bear crawl. That's not one that I'd heard of, but that sounds like a lot of fun. You could do it around the whole house. Bear crawl, and you know, we know plank and things like that. You know, I'm picturing, you didn't say specifically plank, but I know you're probably at some point going to talk about that and doing it with one leg and then the other leg, or side plank. And my question, Mason, is if we were to just, you know, if we're not so inclined to go to the gym right now, and yet we want to get ready for skiing and we're just in our living room, you know, is it good enough to just sort of Google core exercises and, you know, and follow just some free video that comes up, you know, just based on sort of intuition about, oh, this person looks really fit. And, you know, what's your recommendation on that? Or do you have some sites that we could look up?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I think, you know, there's no harm in being your own advocate and seeking out information and giving it a go with different things. Just, you know, you being informed is really important. And so I'm not going to say that, you know, if you look up an exercise on the internet, that's not a good exercise for you and you're going to get hurt no matter what. I mean, I think there's some value in being self-driven and having just the ability to do that independently. But yeah, I mean, what you want to do is look at, is this person's goals, are they in line with what I'm trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have any pre-existing condition, then maybe, you know, I might want to modify what I do. I had mentioned previously, I broke my elbow last summer, and I no longer can really do a push-up or a burpee because I have an artificial elbow. I have a plastic elbow.
Wow.
And so if I try and do push-ups, for me, I can do them. I just pay the price, and it's just really, really achy, and I don't want to have any surgical revision later in my life. And so I just have to make that decision, what's appropriate for me. And sometimes having a medical professional help you guide through that can be a little bit of a learning curve and a catastrophe avoided, so that you don't end up in a position where you're worse off than where you were. And so, yeah, I think especially if you have some pre-existing conditions or you've struggled with different painful areas, or then yeah, having someone guide you through that would be good. Our Live Well Center is fantastic. We have exercise specialists that help in just that particular situation, as well as with our physical therapy department. We are currently seeing patients in the clinic if people are wondering what the status is. We're not doing, you know, traditionally we've done some group fitness classes. We're not doing anything in groups, but we are doing one-on-one, and they typically need to have either a diagnosis or a problem that they're working through. So, I mean, but we have a campaign to have people do some exercises independently. And so through our blog, the Live Well blog through Intermountain, we have different exercises that we have suggested through, you know, healthcare professionals that are advising on what exercises might be good and safe for someone to perform if you are independent at home, and maybe if you don't have the equipment at home that a gym might have.
That's great. I didn't even know the Live Well Center came out with a blog, but you can just look it up, Google it, I assume, Live Well blog at Intermountain, and get all kinds of great articles. Okay, so, well, let's move on from the core then. Obviously, as you said, the core, it's very simple, but it's very crucial to having a successful ski season. And you know, I guess the question is, I mean, it makes sense. It's common sense, right? But what is a strong core going to, how is it going to help you when it comes to, you know, say you're banking a turn and you run into a pile of slush or a hard bump and then, you know, our knees are going to be compromised. How would a strong core help us to not injure our knee, or would it?
Yeah, good question. I think core is a buzzword. You know, work your core, engage your core. People talk about that a lot, but what is your core? You know, sometimes people say that, like, you know, which muscle are you actually even talking about? So when you talk about the core, it's a group of muscles, and, you know, your abdominal muscles, as well as your hip muscles, your glute muscles that are on the side of your hips that help abduct, as well as, like I said, the abdominal, you have a little bit of a network of multiple abdominal muscles that go in different angles. And I always like to add the shoulder exercises or shoulder muscles as part of the core, so that you, because your scapula stabilizes a lot when you're doing upper body motion. So I think it's good to kind of just delineate, you know, it's easy to say core, but what exactly is that? But then, you know, as the analogy I used before, you know, if you have a loose cannon, you can have really strong arms, really strong legs. But if you don't have equal and opposite strength provided from your core, when you use those strong muscles, you're going to have kind of this wet noodle effect through your midsection. And that's not good, both from a performance standpoint and from injury prevention. And so the way that it works is, a classic example is a lot of the knee pain and how the knee tracks in position, mm-hmm. is a result of the stability of the hip. And so a lot of ACL rehab and patellofemoral pain rehab, one of the main things that we really look at is the stability of the hip and the ability to, the motion that we call is, we call it abduction. So the ability to hold your hip and extend your leg out if you were to have your leg off the ground. But when you're standing on a stance position, it just maintains that stable position. Both of the hip, then it directs where your knees are going to go as you are carving those turns or pushing your shopping cart through the grocery store or walking up and down your stairs doing just basic human movement. So yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think it is a buzzword to talk about the core, but it's a kind of an oversimplification when you think, you know, what is it actually doing? Why is it important to me? I think most people understand that, but when you actually talk about what is it that's actually happening, I think I've seen in my patients a lot of a little bit more ownership and retention in doing the exercises when they really do get that, oh yeah, okay, so this will help me go faster and not have an injury if I do this particular exercise.
My guest is Mason Law. He's a doctor of physical therapy at Intermountain Park City Hospital and the physical therapy department. You've seen him there. Anyone who has been lucky enough to be in physical therapy, I've seen you around the department there. It almost seems like a badge of honor, and I'm going to knock on wood as I even say that, because I have not had that badge of honor replacing my ACL or MCL yet. But if you've ski long enough and you live in Park City long enough, most people say it's bound to happen, but I don't want it to happen. So what specifically, if we're talking leg, you know, knee stability and that sort of thing, what do we do?
Strengthen your quads. A lot of stability comes from the quads. If your quads are strong, then that'll help you. And when I say strengthen, not just get them strong, but also make sure that you do exercises where you're not just using machines. Body weight exercises are important so that you can track the knee in the correct plane. You need to have the strength and the control. And so doing some of these really, really simple basic exercises where maybe you're just using your body weight requires your body to stabilize. And, you know, some people throw around the word muscle memory. Mm-hmm. We like to use motor control or even other medical jargon. But the ability to not just be strong, but to be strong and hold it in a certain position is really crucial. That's one element. Reaction time, reaction speed. So doing exercises where you are doing plyometrics, which is jumping stopping and changing the speed of the exercises, because there's a component when you are strengthening, do you need to be strong, but you need to be able to access that strength in a quick amount of time. And the studies have shown if you can react within a certain time, you're more likely to save, you know, yourself from a yard sale than have a complete catastrophic crash. So it's not just being strong, it's being able to produce that force quickly. And the mechanism of an ACL injury on skiing is a little bit different than, you know, your traditional high school sports where you have like a non-contact twisting injury. For sure that happens, but a lot of times we see, you know, a binding failure where the binding is put on super, super duper tight and the skier crashes and the ski doesn't pop off. And then it just acts as a lever to twist the knee. And so that's something that we see a lot. And a lot of it is really anecdotally what I've seen is reaction to unexpected things. You know, maybe someone comes out in front of you or you're in flat light and you change the condition of the snow. It goes from super, super fast to super slow, slushy, not slushy, but like that glue molasses. Mm-hmm. And so being able to kind of anticipate the conditions is a really, really important thing as well. So whether you are early season skiing and, you know, there's a lot of people out there, just maybe, you know, take it easy over the holidays because there's a lot of people and there's not very many routes that are open or runs that are open. And so I think just doing a little mental rehearsal before each run goes a long way as to maybe thinking about some unexpected hazards that might pop up. So kind of just coming back to some of the basics, but yeah, strength, motor control, being able to do react quickly, and then just trying to anticipate hazards as opposed to reacting to those. Those are kind of my core principles that I teach my patients.
These are great principles. I think I'm going to go home and set up my box jumps in the garage. Box jumps. I mean, that's we do box jumps not only to strengthen our quads, but to have that quick reaction time. Is that right?
Yeah, box jumps are fantastic. You get a lot of plyometrics, you get strength, you get the ability to control the knee. If you do it in front of a mirror and watch to see if your knees are buckling in or they're going out, it's really, really good. Plus you get the endurance. You know, one thing we haven't talked about is the endurance. Mm-hmm. And if you are skiing early season, maybe it's going to take you a few days out on the mountain before you up to doing a whole day of skis and skiing. And so, you know, having that endurance is important in a few, like a intensity interval training session that'll help build that endurance as well, which is huge because a lot of times, you know, people are fatigued. As you fatigue, some of those skills that you had before, maybe, you know, if your knee is stable or if your legs are strong enough to hold you, maybe they're not so strong as on the first run of the day.
Yeah. Mason Law, I feel like I could talk to you for hours, but we've got limited time here. So you can visit Mason Law at the physical therapy department at Intermountain Park City Hospital. And just one quick question, because I think people in the community have this. It's a little confusing. So as you said before, if we're coming into physical therapy, we need a referral. But we could also go through the LiveWell Center if we wanted to do their sort of fitness, you know, program. And we could also access your services through that way. And we wouldn't have to get a referral. Is that correct? Or help me out there.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so there's actually three departments. So there's the physical therapy department, there's our LiveWell department, and then we have our third department, which is sports performance, which is kind of a hybrid of the two, which, you know, I don't need to get into too much of that. But yeah, as far as how people get in, and really honestly, Utah, the state of Utah is considered a direct access state. So for physical therapy, you don't always need the law. You do not need a referral for physical therapy. The reality, though, is most insurers, your insurance requires it. Not all, but most of them would require a doctor's note for physical therapy prior to. But you may want to look, because for physical therapy, you may not even actually need a referral from a doctor. Oh. That's just more based off of who your insurance is. But then, yeah, coming in for the LiveWell Center to do any of the services that we provide here, you can just come in and most definitely no prescription or referral is required. And yeah, whether you're doing a one-on-one strengthening session with some of our XLI specialists, or whether you're doing a bike fit with me or Dr. Testa, feel free. Just people can call in, they can schedule, and we are seeing people. The biggest restriction that we have now is people are just being screened at the door, making sure you know the questions that we've all been screened, and we are taking all the precautions here at the hospital, and we're not doing anything in group settings, obviously. So if you were to come in, it would just be a one-on-one session.
Mason Law, thank you so much for joining me today on The Mountain Life. It's been great, just chock full of great information for everyone out there.
Pleasure's all mine.
All right, take care and have a great ski season. Take care of that elbow.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.